Yeah, g'day, mate. You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Mr. International, Mr. Worldwide himself, we have Arjuna Oaks here to Corridor about his new record, debut record, I should say, which is called While I'm Distracted. Good morning to you, Mr. Arjuna Oaks. How are you?
Kia ora, morena. I'm good. Thank you. The International. Wow, you really built me up there.
Yeah,
Jesus.
Mr. Worldwide, like Pitbull himself. It's great.
That's exactly what I'm modeling my career off. Football. Yeah. That's what I'm going for, man. Yeah.
When the next album comes out and the sales aren't so good, you know, you gotta pivot. You gotta make a career pivot.
I think so. Yeah.
Go bald. Now we are here to talk about your new record, which is called While Undistracted. Before we touch on that, I want to touch on how you're finding London. How is it going?
It's great, man. Yeah, it's really cool. I've been here for a year and a half, and I feel like I'm kind of settling in. I feel like I adjusted quite quickly, actually, in lots of ways, like especially with community and friends and stuff. You know, I kind of went crazy last year. I just went out every single night. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of playing a little bit chiller this year, which has been good for me, I think. But yeah, man, it's crazy. There's so much going on. And I've definitely adjusted. It's really cool. But that's very different.
That's good, because I know people who have moved a lot of my friends have moved to Melbourne, and some of them have not really still found their footing a year after moving there, which is really unfortunate. So I'm glad
that you've
adjusted.
It takes a long time.
It does.
Yeah, it takes a long time for in a big city. I mean, what, there's 5 million, 6 million people in Melbourne. There's like 10 million in London. It's ridiculous. It's like so big. But it's exciting, you know, and I think the musically, diverse-wise, it's so diverse musically because there's just so many people. Like, that's the only reason, really. And so I just kind of, went to a lot of gigs and met a lot of really cool, interesting people up to cool stuff. And
nice.
Yeah, man, it's been fun. But I've, you know, I've also just, you know, moved around flats and had bed bugs and, you know, all sorts of crazy things. So, yeah.
They're like a top. So bugs in my beard are a top fear of mine. Not a fan.
Horrible. Yeah, it's not all rainbows, you know. No. That's kind of part of the experience.
Gosh, that is a very London thing to experience. A little bit of misery. The new record is called While I'm Distracted. What do you think is currently the biggest distraction in your life?
Whoa, going on the big questions. Wow. Well, social media, definitely, 100%. I mean, that's what some of the record, I mean, it's kind of about a lot of different distractions and quite a few kind of themes kind of wrapped up and stuff. But there is definitely stuff about social media on the record, and that's been something I've kind of observed and struggled with for a while. And I guess musically, I'm always interested in how it affects us as human beings and how it makes us relate to each other and communicate with each other. But yeah, for me personally, I just feel like I spend way too much time on social media, and it doesn't make me feel very good about myself either, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess trying to get that. But when you're a musician, man, you got to be on there.
You got to market yourself, sadly. It's really dumb.
You got to do it, and I've tried to find a way that makes it enjoyable and fun and authentic, but it's tricky sometimes.
What was the social media site you spent the most time on?
Oh, Instagram.
Yeah. Are you on Instagram? Yeah. Are you like going through those reels, reeling it up?
Yeah. Well, I just like I'll get it to post something, do something on there, and then I'll accidentally just go on a reel and then just kind of suck away time. And
yeah,
I'm trying to like spend more time reading books and even just like watching a film or something that's a bit more long form rather than just this, you know, thing.
Immediate.
It's something we need.
Yeah.
Yeah. That dopamine hit, man. It's everyone's struggling with it. But, you know,
Yeah. We got to retrain our brain somehow, eh? You were sitting on this album for around 2 years, and you said you wrote it almost preemptively, that this album consists of like mantras that you needed to hear now. Mm-hmm. What are some of those mantras that you needed to hear?
Yeah, well, the big one for me in the album is there's a song called Won't Let This World Break My Heart, which is kind of the one that I think I understood the most on a different level after living in London. I think originally, you know, I write my lyrics very subconsciously, you know, they come from a very subconscious place, and I'm not usually being very literal in my lyrics. They're trying to kind of paint a picture.
Yeah.
And usually, yeah, they come out of interesting places, which I love that because it surprises me. It makes it more interesting. Mm. I don't ever want to get to the point where I'm like, I know exactly what I'm going to say, and, you know, because it would just be boring at that point. It
becomes a science, not art.
Yeah, and it becomes preachy and kind of, you know, contrived. And I'd rather have fun with it and be messy with it. And so I think Won't Let This World Break My Heart came from a place of feeling... just, you know, you get older and you experience more of the world and you realize how kind of crazy a place it can be. And it was definitely coming from a more of a place of witnessing what was going on through online and also just getting older and going through things, heartbreaks and losing loved ones and all sorts of things. Mm. And then I think, you know, that went to another level in my life just when I moved to London and went through different stuff in London and feeling isolated from my community back home and all sorts of kind of things and needing Bed to bugs, hear that, you know, yeah. needing to just hear, you know, that mantra of like, I won't let this get the best of me. I won't let this world break my heart. And that is the song I'm probably, yeah, like the one that really resonates with me the most throughout. But other ones as well. I mean, I kind of wrote songs for my, I don't know, I was writing out of a subconscious place and I don't think I consciously understood quite a bit of what I was trying to do until afterwards. Mm. And that's made this whole marketing process so much easier because I still am in love with the music. So that's good.
That's great. That's very good to hear, man. Are you like... Well, actually, before I get to that question, that song "Won't Let This World Take My Heart" plays just before the track "No One," which is a brutal listen, man. If it's the one I can recall, it's the one where you're sad and crying. Yeah. Was it a one take pony?
It was fully improvised.
Fully improvised, right? Yeah, because you can feel how raw that song is.
It wasn't a written song. It was just literally, I just sat down at my keyboard. I was living in Wellington at the time, and the landlord kindly allowed me to have a little studio in the basement, but it was very dark and dingy. Mm. And I remember just playing on my keyboard, and I just sang this thing and recorded it. And it wasn't a preconceived song. It just kind of came out. And I had it in this recording, and I remember thinking, wow, this is amazing. Like, I was thinking, okay, I'm going to redo it. I'm going to get a better piano sound. I'm going to, you know, actually write it, because some of the lyrics is just mumbo jumbo.
Yeah.
And then the more I kind of didn't listen to it for like a couple of years, and then came back to it and went, oh my God, there's this crazy feeling in this. Like, I can't not put it on the record. Like, it's, you know, the fact that it's fully improvised means... Yeah, I mean, I don't even want to play it live because I just feel like I'm never going to recreate what's in that recording, you know, and it was like a spirit of the moment thing. And I left my crying in there, and I've had people tell me they cry, like Sam, my drummer, who's the sweetest dude you'll ever meet. He cried his heart out when he first heard that song. So I'm grateful that people resonate with it in that way.
I certainly did. I was bawling like a baby. Very beautiful.
Oh, good. Sorry.
Thank you. As we mentioned before, this you've been sitting on this record for 2 years. Are you usually this patient with things in life like this?
I think working in the music industry makes you very patient. I think about time very differently. Like, I feel like, you know, 6 months isn't very long to think of how to do something because I've been used to making big pro. Well, you know, this is my first full length album, but I've done a lot of EPs and stuff, and sometimes they take a while. But I think actually the biggest thing that's taught me patience is teaching music, teaching piano, especially to kids. Mm. You have to be so, so patient. Mm. And you know, especially when you teach kids, when you get to that moment where they finally, their eyes light up and they just love what they're doing, and maybe it took a year to get there, you realize, oh my God, it was all worth it. That feeling of seeing someone is such an incredible thing. So yeah, it has made me patient. I am impatient in lots of things, especially with like the you know, the kind of career side of my, or the business side of my career. I want things to happen and I want to be ambitious and do things. But I think it's always a really good thing for my ego when that doesn't happen, when I have to be pushed back and go, okay, you know, just be patient. Mm-hmm. And yeah, being a musician, man, like the emotional whiplash that you go through it keeps you humble.
Yeah.
It really does. I'm grateful for it.
Mm. I'm glad to hear that you've got such a positive take on it, man. That's refreshing as. I really like the second track here, which is really where the album kicks off. Nothing's Going to Fill You Up, which, you know, goes about everywhere a song can in terms of its moods and instrumentation. But the theme of this track is kind of living with yourself and with a spiritual hole that craves and nothing can satisfy it. Do you think that music kind of fills that hole for you?
Kind of. I mean, the point of the song, I guess, is that nothing will really fill that hole.
Yeah.
And, I mean, music is such an incredible thing in my life. You know, it's the biggest thing, the biggest gift that it gives me is that it's a way for me to express myself authentically. And it's therapy. I mean, that's probably the main reason why most artists make art is because it's therapy. Mm. And I've had to come to terms with, sometimes there's been moments in my life where I feel like I haven't been very adept musically in certain places, and I've had to look at myself and go, okay, I'm not a musician, I'm a person, I have all sorts of things to offer the world and myself and other people. Mm. And I don't need to base my whole personality off music. So I don't know, like, it's a blessing and a curse, because you can definitely go too far down the rabbit hole and then, you know, my fingers might break and then I'll be depressed, you know. But like, I guess I'm more than just a musician. It's what I do and how I express myself, but it's not everything.
Yeah, this is again the emotional whiplash we're talking about, this we're trying to figure out, yeah, who you are is a whole thing. There's definitely kind of a tone of alienation throughout this record, like on Pocket Full of Paranoia, which has a really kind of uneasy THX-like intro. Do you remember THX?
Yeah,
terrifying. And as well as the penultimate song, which we've already mentioned, No One. And, you know, we're talking about some big, heavy world issues on here. Like, there's a mention of World War III on the record. You know, have you learnt to internalise the idea that, you know, things that you can't control shouldn't worry you too much?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think it helps being able to write music about it and express... I mean, Pocket Full of Paranoia is really about expressing all of that pent-up kind of just craziness. I mean, you know, it's not hard to feel like you're going apeshit.
Oh, you were all crazy. Being taught to go insane. Yeah, our reptile brains are being manipulated for profit. Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's almost worse when we can't express that, when everyone's like, yeah, it's fine, we're all fine. And I think, you know, for that song was just like, kind of getting it all out of my system. It helps to have music to do that, you know, for me. Like I said before, it's like therapy. But I don't know, you know, things still bother me. And I think, you know, if things didn't bother me, if I was totally apathetic to what was going on in the world, I would be.
This would be a very different album.
Well, it would be a very different album, and I'd be concerned, because that's not what, you know, humans are built. Well, I hope not. Some are.
Oh, totally.
I want to be connected, but I don't want to be so affected that it stops me from living.
Yes, there's a fine line between, like, staying alert and, you know, having activist tendencies, I think, is a really awesome thing to do. But, I think you do have to develop, like, kind of a shield, because if you don't, I mean, you will just be swallowed whole by all the horrible things that are happening. You know?
Yes, exactly, exactly. And then also, what's the point if there's not good stuff to fight for or to celebrate, you know?
Mm. Like this
record. If it's all doom and gloom, then yeah. I talked about No One because that was actually the original... I wanted that to be the last track. and I had
I thought so. Yeah.
Yeah, I had a couple good friends of mine who really convinced me to not make it the last track for the Mallet Groove to be. And the main reason was is that, I mean, ultimately, you know, I write some of the music I write can be quite dark, and I do express those emotions through my music because it's therapy. But I'm quite a happy-go-lucky person, and I do definitely look on the bright side of things. And I want this album to reflect who I am as a person. And I think ending it that way with a bit more of an optimistic view is definitely more me. You know, if I ended it with no one, sure, it would be a pretty crazy ending, but it wouldn't quite be me, you know. And I think, you know, especially with art, there's a lot of hope in people expressing themselves through art because it connects people with their humanity. It connects us together. And I think that's a beautiful thing and deserves to be celebrated.
For sure. Another thing that unites us, I had an author recently on the program who wrote a book about Matariki around the world, and it's been recently translated into Te Reo Māori. And, you know, there's not a culture, basically not a place on this earth where Matariki hasn't been celebrated by humanity, you know? It's been in Africa, Australia, South America, North America, Asia, Europe. All cultures of all stripes have always celebrated that star cluster. You know, there's so much that unites us that I think we need to remember.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And before we were chatting on air, we were talking about a mutual, we know, Ruben Brown. I went to high school with him. He was recently a conductor on your new project. What can you reveal about that? Because I feel like you've been sitting on quite a lot.
Yeah. It's a project with some incredible musicians in Wellington. I mean, I can talk about it because we did a crowdfunding thing for it at the time.
Nice.
So if anyone gave us money, don't worry, it is still coming out. It's been a long time. The main reason was just, so I did it in collaboration with a good friend of mine, Leah Thomas, who's she's an incredible classical musician, was based in Wellington, and she ran an orchestra called Gallery Orchestra. And we basically did this project where we did a whole live album of new material with 16 musicians all live in a chapel. And I wrote the whole thing and wrote the string arrangements and notated it all, and it was crazy. It was like the month before I left to the UK, so it was stupid amount of work, but it was really fun. And and Ruben conducted it, and that was an amazing thing because I'd never worked that closely with a conductor before. Like, I've done stuff with Orchestra Wellington, and I've done stuff with quartets where I'm, you know, I just give it to the quartet and they kind of do it. But with Ruben, he really knew how to, you know, my score that was all right written, but it was a little crude in places, and he was able to just translate it to the musicians in a way that allowed it to be just that extra kind of, you know, humanity through the performances. So yeah, it'll come out at some point. Leah's living in New York as well, so she's been through and studying, so we've kind of both been really busy. And I've been trying to get this album out, so now there's a bit of time for us to put that out before whatever else I do. I don't know what that'll be.
Well, it sounds like you've got a very, very exciting future ahead of you, and I want to thank you for putting out this record while I'm distracted. Big fan.
Thank you.
I can't wait to listen to it more.
Thank you.
And,
I'm glad you enjoyed it, man.
Oh, so much, man. I need to listen to it more. And, you know, hopefully we'll see you here in Aotearoa in the near future.
You will. I'm going to try and get back next this coming summer. So,
fantastic.
Yeah,
we'll see. I can't wait to see you, man. Take care, and hopefully London keeps treating you well.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you. All right, folks, that was Arjuna Oaks. We're having a chat with him about his new record, While I'm Distracted, which is out wherever you get your music from. We're going to play probably my favourite track on the record, Nothing's Going to Fill You Up, from the record. So let's hear it. Arjuna Oaks with Nothing's Going to Fill You Up. You're listening to The One. Take care.
Seebs. That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.